Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guess.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. This is episode number 93. I'm Paul Spain.
And I'm Siobhan Keogh.
Welcome along, Siobhan. Good to have you back on the NZ Tech Podcast.
Yes, it has been a while.
Now, last time was in Las Vegas, wasn't it?
Yes, in January this year at CES. Yeah.
So now you're based at PC World. Tell those who don't know. Well, you probably have to tell everyone. Actually, people don't get a choice. Tell us what you do at PC World.
So I am the staff writer, which sounds quite boring, but I think I actually have the coolest job because I get to do all the fun stuff without shouldering all the responsibility. So I get the smartphones and the tablets and the games. The games are kind of my primary thing. I mean, there have been times when I've signed games editor instead of staff writer on things just because it's easier to explain to people what I do. So that's pretty much it.
Excellent. Oh, that's good. Well, we appreciate all the knowledge and experience that will help you tell us all sorts of interesting opinions this evening. Now, let's jump in. We're really, I guess, getting into something of a, I don't know, vortex of technology stories at the moment. It's like the industry's just going absolutely mad. We're racing at a rapid pace towards Christmas, and there'll be all sorts of sales and new products coming on with that. So it really is a good fun time for everyone with an interest in technology, isn't it?
It is. It's a bit annoying for our deadlines just because we're on deadline now and all the good stuff is coming out at the end of this month. So everything's launching immediately before our magazine actually goes on shelves, which means none of that stuff we're able to get in the magazine. So it's a bit of a pain, but I do love this time of year because we get all this cool stuff all at once.
Well, I'm sure you've got plenty of good indication of what's coming and new products coming through. So I'm sure there'll be plenty in the current issue, but also worth keeping a watch on the PC World website, right? For all the stories in between.
For sure. I mean, we try to keep things up to date on a daily basis. We're going to be covering all that stuff that you're looking forward to, like Windows 8, obviously. We've been covering that so extensively that I don't think there's any other publication in New Zealand that's doing anywhere near as much work on Windows 8. And then we've got the rumours of the iPad Mini coming up. So we've definitely got a bunch of stuff going online very shortly.
Yeah, oh, that's good. Well, let's dive in because some of those topics are quite relevant for this week's news on the NZ Tech Podcast. So first up, last Friday we had the announcement that Microsoft have finished off all of their new business products. Microsoft Office, which they're calling Office 2013 in some forms, or the new Office if you're subscribed through the online subscriptions like Office 365. And there's, associated products, Exchange and SharePoint. Those are really going to be of interest mostly to businesses, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. To be honest, I've only had a really brief look at the new Office stuff, and it was mostly Word and Excel. But I definitely think that it's kind of a good thing for businesses, and it's a good thing for people who are going to be running Windows 8, but maybe not so much for people on older operating systems.
Well, it's interesting, actually, from the consumer side, that they're changing from this go out and buy a box with a Microsoft Office DVD in it to a model where you can just pay a monthly subscription, right? That's quite a big change.
Yeah, it is. I think it's just a reflection of how everything is moving into the cloud, and people are really asking for that. I mean, pretty much since Google Docs' inception, people have been, using it. I would say a lot of people use it as their primary word processor now. So I guess it's just Microsoft's reaction to everything moving into the cloud. They're going, okay, we're a little bit late on this, but here you go. We've got this. It's going to be a more well-developed product than the offerings you have now. I mean, I don't know that. I haven't tested. I haven't tested it, but I know that that's what they're going for
mm.
With more functionality. So, yeah, they're just moving their office suite to their full-on office suite to the cloud, I think.
Well, you're using it now, aren't you? With the agenda, you're looking at the new office on your on the Android tablet.
Yes, I am currently. That, I think that's a little bit criminal that I'm looking at it on an Android tablet. But yes, I'm currently using SkyDrive on this tablet, looking at our agenda.
But in the office now, you guys. I mean, Fairfax across the board. We were talking to Chris from Waikato Times last week, and they've just gone through that transition, and obviously that impacts PC World as well, right? You've all moved across to the Google
Apps.
Yeah.
We used to be on Outlook. We haven't actually moved in terms of the Office Suite. We are still on the Office Suite for now. I don't use it a whole lot because we have a CMS, a content management system that we basically put all of our content directly into, and then that manages both the online side of things and the print side of things.
Right.
And so it's a separate program.
Yeah, so you've got one system that you feed into.
Yeah, so we just write straight into that.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking before that on your old sort of setup, you didn't have, you couldn't access your email from outside of the office. So the move to a cloud-based email system, yeah, obviously brings with it quite a few benefits that you can actually, you know, access things from anywhere and not have to have people send to your personal email address and the like.
It would get quite embarrassing at times just because we're PC World, people expect us to be on the forefront of technology at all times. And we are in our sort of day-to-day lives.
Your
but
lab and test environments and things
exactly.
like that. Yep.
But in the office, in terms of our work computers that we use on a daily basis that sit on our desks, we are basically restricted to whatever the rest of the Fairfax network is using, which can be a little bit restrictive at times, but we're slowly catching up. It's just taking some time.
I guess that's fairly common within, you know, large and multinational businesses to have things quite locked down and there'd be a lot of limitations.
Yeah, and I think it can be annoying, but I think that it's probably, for a really large corporation like Fairfax, it's probably the right way to approach things.
Good. Now, something that we wanted to mention, just coming back to the new version of Office, SharePoint, Exchange, all of those bits and pieces, they're going to be available fairly quickly. We hear businesses will get access to the new Office 2013 very, very quickly, I think by mid-November. So businesses will be able to roll that out quite smartly, and then it'll be available over the coming sort of, you know, month or two following that for consumers and the like. I guess it takes them a while to still have some sort of retail offering, right? They've still got to manufacture boxes and, I don't know, put a CD or a DVD or something in. I guess there's still a version
so.
Like that, right? You're not forced to download it just yet, but I imagine things got to be swinging in that direction. In fact, you wonder why, you know, they couldn't have actually had all this stuff mostly pre-done, but I guess they have to wait for that bit of code to get finalised and put on a disk. But it still seems a bit slow in this world where everything happens so instantly.
I guess you've just got to consider the fact that there are a lot of people, especially of the older generation, who don't even have internet access at home still. Like, maybe they use it at work, but not at home. So, you know, they need their boxed copy. I don't know how they get updates for it, but that's their issue, I guess.
Excellent. Well, I know we definitely get communications from people around the country, and I'm sure you do at PC World as well. You know, we're they're in remote locations, which is actually quite hard to get any sort of reasonable internet connection. So there still needs to be solutions that work for that audience, even if over time that audience is shrinking.
Yeah, I think that could be a problem for New Zealand fairly shortly, because internet access is, the penetration is huge in places like the US, and they're definitely moving towards a download-only environment for a lot of different industries. But I don't think New Zealand is ready for that, but it wouldn't surprise me if these corporations kind of went, okay, well, this is how we're going to do it now. And then people were going, oh, but my data cap, and, you know, there's all of those issues.
Well, fortunately, our data caps are growing, aren't they?
Yes.
So we were chatting about that over the last couple of weeks. So we've got some unlimited data plans now in New Zealand, and Telecom having launched their 500 gig data plan for, was it $119, and I think $99 for a phone line and an internet connection with a 200 gig data cap. So those things are falling reasonably quickly here. Which will help these sort of situations, right?
Yeah.
And in the scheme of things, I guess downloading a piece of software like Office, isn't actually too big when we compare it to video downloads and other bits and pieces, because it's probably not that often in a month you need to do a big download like this. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But more of an issue in obviously rural locations and so on, where they don't have some of the benefits that we have in the cities with these huge becoming low cost data caps. Now, other news that is hopefully of interest to a few of you is that we put online our second video. So the second New Zealand Tech Podcast video is now online. And that's available at nztechpodcast.com and under the Global Voice Media channel on YouTube, if you want to look on YouTube directly. So that's an interesting one. We're going to talk about the products that were featured in that a little bit later on in the podcast, but just giving a little heads up on those new videos that we've launched online, and would certainly encourage everyone to have a little bit of a look. Now, Xbox is big in the news right now.
Yeah, because Xbox is kind of expanding a lot. They've been talking for a few years about how Xbox is becoming more of an entertainment system than a gaming system, especially in the US, where you can actually get Netflix and stuff like that without going through nefarious purposes.
Yeah, there's a few challenging steps to get some of those video services up and running, but Nextbox, where did that come from? Anyway, so today Xbox have announced the global rollout of their new dashboard.
And
that really brings, I guess, even more of the sort of the Metro or the Windows 8 style user interface to Xbox and a bunch of other capabilities, right?
Yeah, the Metro thing is interesting because Xbox was actually kind of the first place you really got to see Metro aside from on Windows Phone when they did last year's update. So that was quite cool because you could immediately see how they were trying to make this style ubiquitous. But now, yeah, I definitely think that's coming into it more, and they're also introducing Xbox Music, which we heard about today, which is both a streaming music service and a store and a subscription streaming service. So they're kind of covering all bases, all entertainment bases, with the word Xbox now, which is kind of
Yeah, it's interesting because they had the Zune Music Pass and the Zune Music service in the past, which was predominantly US, although in recent times they've rolled out some other countries, UK, Australia and so on, but it wasn't really available broadly on an international basis. So, I guess that had been around for a number of years in the US market, but Microsoft really, had a bit of a march stolen on them from the likes of Spotify, who rapidly rolled out in many countries around the world, including New Zealand. How do you think Microsoft are going to do with this new Xbox Music service that, in many regards competes with what Spotify does, but it's going to be, right front and center of the Microsoft platform? So, Xbox, as you mentioned, Windows 8, and of course the new Windows Phone 8 as well. So they've got some pretty strong channels to push it. How do you think that's going to go? Because they've got to start from scratch really in most markets like New Zealand, whereas Spotify is already doing fairly strongly.
Yeah, you're right. Spotify is doing strongly in New Zealand. I've discovered over the last couple of months that just about everybody on my Facebook is now using Spotify. I get all these notifications like, this person is now using the service, they're following your playlists or whatever.
They're very blatant, aren't they, Spotify, about spamming us about every
everybody else's interactions with Spotify. It does my head in.
I just don't care that much. But yeah,
I mean, you can obviously unsubscribe from that stuff, but it's not quite so obvious. Maybe.
Yeah, you still kind of get it on your feed and like in your sidebar on Facebook. So it's almost become quite hard to ignore. But yeah, I think what Xbox are doing is they're launching Xbox Music, a free streaming service for Windows 8 and Windows RT. And as far as I know, it's only Windows 8 and Windows RT. So if you're on Mac or if you're on Linux or if you're on Windows 7 even, you're not going to have access to their free streaming service. And I think that's going to be their major problem, because I think it's already become clear that they're going to have a little bit of trouble selling people on Windows 8, especially consumers on Windows 8, unless they have tablets.
Is that information confirmed? It seems still a little hazy around that picture at the moment, because there is, you know, the Zune client software that's available on Windows 7 that has had, you know, these types of services under the Zune brand available before. But yeah, the impression is that certainly that free streaming isn't coming through that platform, right?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they did subscription services for those who are using older operating systems or alternative operating systems. But yeah, they definitely haven't said, yes, we will do our free streaming service on for people who have older Windows operating systems, which I think is a little unfair.
My feeling is there's probably a little bit more information to come on that, but I mean, we'll keep a watch on it. And we have heard that we expect to see the Xbox Music service available on other platforms as well, right? So we'll probably see that on iOS and Android and so on in the future, right? But we haven't got any dates on that. You haven't seen any availability
dates? No, that's all kind of hush-hush. But they definitely, I mean, when I was at E3, they talked about, it was in June, they talked about making it possible to access their services from all kinds of devices, not just their own devices. So it definitely wouldn't surprise me if they did that, but it also wouldn't surprise me if they put a cost on using it on other devices as opposed to using theirs.
Yep. So we've got the free subscription, then it's $12.99 US. $13 New Zealand a month for the full blown service, which lets you download unlimited tracks that are covered by your use them offline, as well as being able to stream. And Xbox has a thing which I think is unique with Xbox Music, is that unlimited streaming of music videos as well. I'm not sure of any of the other services doing that, which is quite cool. I don't know if you had a play around with that, but that's kind of kind of neat. If you enjoy watching music vids and so on, you can just set that up on your Xbox and it'll just keep playing stuff with
and hopefully they have Gangnam Style.
they've got to just to keep us all entertained. So there's a whole lot really coming through there on the Xbox side. With that dashboard update, also that, you know, they've really improved the sort of the user interface. It just tweaked it a little bit from what we had last year, but they've brought in Internet Explorer as well. So we've got Internet Explorer 9 on the Xbox, and one thing that surprised me there, you know, I didn't really expect it to be very easy to browse the web with a, you know, a little Xbox controller.
Yeah.
But it's actually pretty good, and because it takes that sort of full screen approach that we see with Windows 8, it looks really nice on the TV as well. So I'll be interested just to see whether there's much of an uptake, because there hasn't really been a big uptake on people using browsers through consoles in the past, has there?
Not really. Have you tried using your voice to control the Internet Explorer yet? Is that a thing yet, or is that
there is a level of control? I don't think you can. I'm just trying to remember what I had a look at. Yeah, I don't think you can, you know, you can't, you know, spell out a URL with it, etc.
Right.
But I think there is a little bit of sort of access maybe to favorites and so on. So if you've got things sort of saved, favorites, recent, history, that sort of thing. So there is a level of voice control.
I bet if you said Halo 4, it would just come up with the web page.
I don't know. It's certainly having those voice options around the Xbox is something that, you know, that does stand out, because, it, you know, in the scheme of voice control, it's reasonably capable, but you know, you need the right environment, room, not too much background noise, you've got to be close enough and all of those things. So it's improving. I think, you know, it's in that sort of Siri space at the moment, that it's cool, but it's not the be all and end all, is it?
No, not right now.
No. So that's Xbox. Next week, there's a bit of a product launch going on.
Just a little one.
And New Zealand wins the prize for being first country in the world again.
Do we, though? Because is it going to be a midnight launch? Or is it going to be a 9 a.m. retail launch? Because I'm not sure currently. We don't know much about the Windows 8 launch yet.
There's going to be a press event in Auckland at 8:30 a.m.
Yeah, I've got that.
So there probably aren't too many countries unless they were doing earlier or midnight or something that can be a whole jump on that. So maybe we get the first launch event. In terms of actual being able to buy the product, I guess we'll wait and see. But it is kind of fun that we've got a launch event, you know, here in Auckland, and we know that there are launch events on the 26th of October, you know, the major US and maybe European ones, but the big one in the US, which I think, is it New York or is it California?
I believe it's New York.
Yeah, I think so. So we're going to be, you know, almost a day ahead of New York with our launch, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think we've actually had a history of that with Microsoft launches, which is quite good, because we had the Windows Phone 7 launch. We were the first country in the world to sell a Windows Phone 7 phone. And I think it's becoming more and more common that they just want to release everything globally on the same day, not just Microsoft, but in the technology space in general. Everything on the same day, and we're just lucky enough that we live in a time zone that's ahead of the rest of them.
And we're a country of the right whatever it is to sort of tick the boxes to be included, because there are some countries that always get pushed back a bit to do with language and locality and other bits and pieces,
and disposable income and stuff like that as well.
Sure. So we'll have a whole bunch of news about that. We will be talking about it, no doubt. There'll be a bit more information next week. It seems like there are a lot of things surrounding Windows 8 in terms of new hardware products, new services such as the Xbox things that we've just, you know, heard about or have just been confirmed for launch today. Definitely keep a watch online. There's going to be a lot of news floating around, and listening into the podcast for some of that. And the video that we'll talk about later as well has a lot of interesting things to be seen in regards to Windows 8. So now in other news, Mozilla have been getting some praise around Firefox. Now, this was covered in PC World. What can you tell us about the Firefox browser and why they're in the news this week?
It's kind of interesting if you're really interested in browser security. Basically, they pulled their latest version of their browser, which is Firefox 16, before anything had gone wrong, which is very rare in the IT space, because there was a bug that could, where a malicious website could have exploited it to download the entirety of someone's browser history, which could include usernames and passwords and that kind of stuff as well. So obviously quite a dangerous bug. So they went and they looked at it, and they found that no one had used this exploit yet, but they pulled the browser anyway so they could get that fixed up. So I think that's why they were getting the praise, because they didn't wait for something bad to happen, which happens all too often, as we know from news this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Onto that one now. So what is the big security news that's relevant and probably everyone's heard about through front pages of national newspapers or every newspaper and on the news everywhere? How would you boil down what this big security breach is that's happened in New Zealand this week?
I guess the simplest way to put it is that there were kiosks in Wynn's offices, and Wynn's obviously has a lot of information on a lot of vulnerable people. that had where the user could quite simply access the corporate network for WINS. And the corporate network for WINS has everything from invoices from pharmacies. So people who have been prescribed antidepressants and stuff like that, and their names are attached to these invoices, and people who've been taken into SIFS care and where those kids are living, and just really intimate details of people's lives that are easily accessible by anyone who knows how to use Microsoft Word.
Yeah, it was pretty simple stuff from what we saw. So the blog post was on public access.
Public address.
Sorry, public address.
Yeah.
The public address blog. And yeah, for those who haven't read through it, I mean, it's well worth having a look at. But when you look at how easy it was for them to go in and really access really confidential information that should not have been publicly accessible, it's just really beyond belief how a network could be set up with so many security issues just for somebody to either wander in off the street, use this public terminal, and start accessing and downloading as much confidential information as they've had time to download, right?
Yeah, I think the worst part is the ability for those people to take away that data, because there are USB ports, on every kiosk, which makes sense because you want people to be able to write up their CV or whatever and come print it in the WINS office, right? But given that they had access to all of those files, they, as Keith Ng from Public Address did, could download massive amounts and just pour through it on their own time. It's not like they had to be in the WINS office looking at these files. They could do it at home if they took that information. And the fact that Keith managed to do it tells me that somebody else, at least one other person in New Zealand, has probably taken these files and has them, on their home computer. It's really the worst security incident in New Zealand that I can think of in terms of tech anyway.
So what this to me highlights is that if this can happen to a large government organisation, this could happen to any business or any organisation in New Zealand, couldn't it? That they could have major security issues if they're not taking these things seriously.
For sure. I think it's not exactly a scarcity. It's not as scarce as I'd like anyway. A lot of corporations and I'm guessing government organizations, from what we're hearing now, they'll go for the low cost solution, and people will send, the sysadmins will send reports and go, hey, this isn't secure enough. This is what we need to do to make it more secure. This is how much money it's going to cost. And they look at that figure and they go, no way. It really, I mean, there was the ANZ thing with their terminals that they had, or still have. They had security issues with their terminals because you could just type in a name and say you were that person and you didn't have to provide any ID.
Link you up to info.
And you could, check your baggage for them and all that stuff. So, essentially, you could put something, quite dangerous in your bag, say you were someone else, not get on your flight, and so, bad stuff happens. And I have it on good authority that they were aware of those security issues, but didn't want to pay for it. But, that's just a fairly common problem in IT, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I think businesses need to be aware of in terms of how their technologies run. One of the biggest issues I see, because one of the things that my firm does is often our first engagement with an organisation is to go in and audit the systems and so on that they have in place. Usually a reasonably high level degree, but often in those situations we just see what I would say are issues that come from a lack of ownership around, technology matters. So, at the top level of the business, we want to have things right, but then there's nobody that takes an ultimate level of responsibility around technology matters, security or otherwise. It could be backups, could be security, it could be all sorts of matters that we see, and it's a real challenge within New Zealand organisations. And we've often got a lot of small organisations where IT gets outsourced to somebody, but that somebody's also looking after technology for maybe another 100 organisations, so it's very hard for them to take ownership as well. So I think it's a fairly broad issue that we actually have here. Seeing that in government just highlights how hard it is to get that sort of stuff right. But there are plenty of organisations that do get that right, and there are ways to have somebody, whether it's an individual inside the organisation or whether it's a partner like my firm who takes a level of ownership around those things and says, look, this is our responsibility. We're going to really care about it and to make sure that there aren't issues.
Yeah, I think there's also a general lack of understanding of what the problem is, because when you've got you can have people auditing and handing over their reports, but ultimately, if the person who receives that report doesn't understand what the problem is or just thinks, that's okay, no one will notice, then, I think there's a lack of I'm struggling to find the word, but people who are in business don't necessarily understand how the technology side of things works very well.
And the importance of those things. Yeah. And on the flip side, it's really impossible to cover every security issue, right?
Yeah.
So, there's no way, any organisation in New Zealand can say they're, 100% secure, because there are all sorts of, security risks, whether it's individuals and within the organisation, whether it's a piece of technology. There are all sorts of, ways to get at these systems. So, it's all very well having somebody take ownership or having some responsibility, but, you will never mitigate every risk, will you?
No, I think pretty much all corporations can do is take advice from people who know what they're talking about and do their best to make sure that it's as secure as possible anyway.
Yep. All right. Well, let's hope, I guess, that this one, stirs up a little bit of interest in getting these things right in New Zealand. We've obviously seen other issues over the last few months and years around security issues. And this one just adds to that list, but hopefully it's enough to stir organisations up a little bit more to improve their game. Now, also, kind of a fun thing that happened yesterday was a bit of a jump from, not quite space, but
The stratosphere. Yeah.
Did you watch some of the footage online of Felix? Can you pronounce his surname?
I'm not sure that I can. Pretty much all I know off the top of my head, and I don't have the article open, unfortunately, is that it starts with B.
Yeah, my take on it, and I probably should listen to the TV news where they always get things impeccably right. Felix Baumgartner, and he jumped from 37 kilometres high.
Yeah, and when you consider that the average plane flies at about 1 kilometre high off the ground, that's a pretty long way. Is it 10?
10, oh, yeah. 30,000 feet, so it's about 10 k's up.
Okay, my math is bad.
But, yeah, that far up, I mean, looking at the footage, you're totally looking at it looks like you're in space, right? You can see the Earth as a sphere. It's not just...
And you can see, the horizon, you can see the atmosphere is what I'm trying to say. You can see the light and then the dark behind him. It's kind of a mind-blowing thing for me. I really get quite excited about space.
Yeah, no, definitely, it's really cool we get these stories. Some of the footage showed him just spinning completely out of control.
He stuck the landing, though.
It was just madness, right? The whole thing. It's incredible that that it was able to take place. Certainly a good bit of publicity stunt for
Red Bull.
For Red Bull, yeah. Right? To get their name on this. And they seem to be very good at aligning their brand with all sorts of cool, extreme adventures. And this sort of probably has got to be at the top of the list, right? It's
I'm sure they were all just crossing their fingers, hoping that it would work out and nothing disastrous would happen. But it did make me think about the fact that as we start venturing more and more into space and doing more cool things, it's all going to be corporate sponsored. And that was really quite a weird realization. But I think that's actually where space technology is going to have to go now.
Well, we're moving from these government funded things that we've had in the past with NASA and so on, where there's a lot of opportunity for businesses to actually profit from a direct involvement. So they're jumping
on
in, right? Yeah.
Vodafone here doing their competition with the Galaxy S3 that they did. I don't know who won that, actually. I should have a look into it. But they gave away a trip to space. It was like it wasn't quite space again. I think it was another edge of space.
Yeah, about 100Ks kind of up.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But it is cool. But yeah, I think it's just another example of how space is actually going to become more of a commercial venture than a government funded one, as it has been in the past.
Yep, definitely cool stuff. And I guess this is certainly a story that's sort of on the edge of between geekdom and superstar sportsman sort of thing. But this footage wouldn't be too far out of place in a sci-fi or a Superman movie. So really worth having a look on YouTube if you haven't. And the other thing they got was they broke some records with YouTube, didn't they? I think they had about 8 million. Was it 8 million simultaneous views? But it was crazy numbers. So
yeah. Watching the live stream. So I guess it's not simultaneous, but during the live stream, there were that many users.
8 million views, right? It. Yeah, across while it was streaming live, which is awesome. And it's great to see the way that technology is now able to scale. I mean, that sort of thing would have been unheard of, in years gone by. But now, these systems are just geared up for it and handle it with probably a bit of drama behind the scenes. but I didn't notice it when I jumped in and watched some of it. So it was pretty cool.
I thought you were going to tell me that you jumped.
No. People have told me to in the past to go jump. But, I wouldn't jump from that height, probably. I wouldn't know how to...
There's a reason they call him Fearless Felix.
Yes. Pretty cool story. So what we'll do is we'll try and include that YouTube link in the podcast. So if you jump up to nztechpodcast.com, along with the show details, we'll have that video because it's really cool.
Yeah.
Or have one of the videos. There's
also
quite
a head cam video that I really liked, so you should put that one up.
Yeah. Now moving on to gadgets. So those are kind of all the big top stories, but now if we look at some of the devices that are coming through, some of this stuff's pretty cool. So we're going to split this up. We've got some tablet news, smartphone news, and computer sort of snippets. So first up, all-in-one PCs. We're starting to hear a lot of buzz around these new computers that are, I guess, a TV, like a TV screen, but with computer built in. These sort of things have been around for a long time. And of course, the iMac is an example of one of those all-in-one computers. But with Windows 8, we're seeing these now coming through with touch screens. And one of the ones that we had hands-on with over the weekend, and you'll see this in the video we put online, is the Samsung Series 7 all-in-one. Now, this is a really cool-looking machine. It looks like sort of the top-of-the-line Samsung TV in terms of its format, but it's a Windows 8 PC. I think they're going to come with Intel Core i3 or i5 processors. and they have a Blu-ray player, and they've got HDMI in and out. So, you know, you could hook in a Sky decoder or any sort of set-top box, Freeview, whatever you want to hook into that as well. And you've got the HDMI out if you wanted to hook into another, you know, TV or something. Really, really nice. Have you sort of had a look at some of the stuff coming through on these new Windows 8 all-in-one products?
Yeah, I think actually the key thing for the Windows 8 ones is that they have 10-point multi-touch, because which is basically you can use all of your fingers at once on the touch screen, and some of the gestures in Windows 8 require you to use all of your fingers if you want to be able to use it, use gestures for just about everything, which you can pretty much do. It's quite impressive. So I think that's actually the key thing for all-in-one PCs. I mean, yes, they have to have the power backing them up, and they have to look great, because Windows 8's design is very nice and pretty and clean. Mm. But the major thing, I think, from a usability perspective, is making sure that people can use their hands in the way that Microsoft intended them to on those all-in-ones.
Yeah, the interesting area for these has been the use in a sort of kitchen environment, because there are different places where people have had computers in the past, and I've had a touch screen on my desk before and haven't used it a lot. Although these new devices look really nice and actually would be quite nice to have on your desk. But if you look at the video, we put it in that kitchen environment. We took the keyboard away, with it, potentially being that sort of little entertainment device. You could, watch stuff on, but maybe bring up recipes and that sort of stuff. And in the past, there have been devices that sort of suit that. But I think these new touchscreens with Windows 8 are really much closer to the mark in terms of what might be useful for, those who have got, everything in their house, and they're just looking for where else can I put something cool. It could be quite a good fit.
I think definitely once they get voice control into that kind of thing as well, because if I'm cooking chicken and my hands are covered in chicken juice, I don't exactly, I need to go wash my hands before I use the touch screen or a keyboard. But I'd really like to be able to say, okay, video pause, or play or scroll down or something like
next
that.
Next page of the recipe,
yeah,
whatever
exactly.
It is.
Exactly. Yeah. So that I can continue on with what I was doing without having to go and wash my hands and then go back and then start cooking again and then go wash my hands and,
Yeah, well, I guess with a good glass screen that would be less of an issue, but
as long as you can clean it.
Long as you can clean it up afterwards. It was certainly fun having a play with the Samsung all-in-one. And we've seen products coming through from HP and, most of the manufacturers actually have got stuff coming through in that space. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see and hear from any of you that decide to go ahead and get one of these. I've played around with having this sort of device in the kitchen before, and it hasn't kind of really been ready just yet. So, I'll be curious who jumps in with these and what they think of them. Now, tablets. So, iPad Mini. We've been hearing about this for a while. We've talked about the iPad Mini on the NZ Tech Podcast a few times in the past.
Mm.
And there's been really a bit of a debate whether such a thing will ever eventuate. Now, I've always been leaning on the side that, with all the rumors and bits and pieces we're hearing, I think there's a pretty good chance this is going to come out. Quite a few of the guests have said, no, we don't think that that's an Apple thing, that they would never do that. What's your take on this, Siobhan, as the noise gets a little bit louder around an iPad Mini launch coming soon?
Well, I'm here to back you up. I think that, I'm not saying that it's 100% going to happen, but I think that it's looking pretty likely now, because they've had some more concrete leaks come out of Apple recently, and out of Foxconn, really. And since we've seen now, I mean, with the iPhone 4S, there were a lot of rumors about it being an iPhone 5, about it being a teardrop shape. There were like mock-ups and all kinds and fakes and all kinds of stuff there. And then we, you know, then the iPhone 4S came out and everyone just went, oh, that's not what I was expecting. But then with the iPhone, the actual iPhone 5, we knew about every single component just about before it actually came out, and we knew the shape and what the front was going to look like and what the back was going to look like and all of that stuff. So I think the leaks are coming out a lot faster and a lot more of them right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if the iPad mini was a thing, especially since I saw Mac Rumors the other day posted pictures of a supposed battery from the iPad mini, which is...
Right, so there's enough info. You think it's like an ear here? Because I think the last rumor that we discussed about on the podcast was a supposed October the 13th launch date.
Mm.
Now we're...
And then it was 17th.
We're past that.
Now it's on the 23rd.
So I'm curious to see what actually happens here in this space. It does seem more likely than not, but I'm not sure it's not 100%. I'm not 100% convinced just yet, but I'm still leaning definitely on the side that this thing's pretty likely.
My boss Zara, for the record, my boss Zara is convinced that it's not happening. So we've had kind of regular talks about it in the office.
Yeah, I think she might have been one of the discussions that we had here on the podcast about it. So. Let's watch and wait on that one. I don't think it's concrete enough to say, yeah, I'm absolutely convinced that it's coming. The timing is interesting for all of this noise because we're getting very close to our next topic, which is Windows 8 and Windows RT tablets. And yeah, it would in many ways seem like sort of a smart timing for Apple to come in and maybe steal a little bit of thunder off Microsoft by launching something, a few days ahead of all these announcements from Microsoft and their many partners around products. But you know whether how much attention you know each would get in comparison. This will be a very interesting thing to watch over the next couple of weeks, I suppose.
Yeah, especially since I think they're trying to... I think if the timing is correct and the iPad mini is announced on the 23rd, I think that's really interesting because Microsoft will have the Surface, and the Surface is aimed at the kind of... or at least the RT, Windows RT version, is aimed at the iPad 3. So... then they're going, okay, but we have this cheaper offering, which I find kind of interesting.
That's where it would certainly stir up some attention if it were to come out in these next few weeks. So yeah, looking at Windows 8, so we've got not just Windows 8 coming out on the 26th of October, but Microsoft are also launching Windows RT, we believe, we're clear on that, launching at exactly the same time. Now Windows RT, I mean the naming, it's a bit strange and confusing, isn't it really, because Windows RT actually is Windows 8, it's just running on the ARM systems or the ARM tablets primarily. It's the same technology that's inside most of the Androids, really all of the Android tablets, and inside the iPad. It just has a limitation that it can't run the traditional desktop apps that we're used to, but in every other regard, as far as we're aware, it's pretty much Windows 8, isn't it?
I think so. I think it's just Windows 8, but it's less of a memory hog, basically.
Yeah, I don't know about the memory. That's an interesting one. But I guess they had to differentiate that different capability that it can't run every app that's made. Yeah, I mean, there'll be apps that are certified for Windows 8, but aren't the new style apps. So you have to make it very clear that these Windows RT systems aren't going to run those apps, right? So I guess that's why it's important that they give it a different name, and you can't... They had to differentiate it in some way.
I think from a usability perspective, it's also... I'm guessing in the past you've used tablets with Windows 7 installed and discovered how difficult those are to use. So I guess what they're trying to do is make sure that you never have to deal with that side of things if you have a tablet, for a Windows RT tablet.
Except that the Windows RT tablets do still come with access to the desktop and that built-in copy of Microsoft Office, the sort of home and student version. So you've got Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and is OneNote in there as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But so they've made those more like easier to navigate through and stuff, haven't they, for Windows RT?
Yep, they've improved it. Well, for any touch screen, they've improved them a little bit, but they're not as touch-friendly, certainly, as the Metro or the new Windows 8 store applications. So I mean I had a good play over the weekend, and someone or a couple of people sort of mentioned to me, oh, you're very lucky to have hands-on with Windows RT, because, you know, generally it hasn't been that broadly available, but managed to have a good look around. And this is on the video that we've put online. We've looked at three of Samsung's products, that all-in-one PC we mentioned just earlier, but also their Windows RT tablet that's being called the Samsung Ative Note. Have I got that right?
I think
Ative,
so.
Although we called it Ative on the video because Samsung called it that in some of their initial stuff, but now they're telling us it's Ative. So there was that one, and then there was the Samsung Ative PC Pro, which is their hybrid tablet / laptop, which bears some similarities to HP's NVX2 that we looked at on our previous video and that we discussed on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. That's quite an interesting form factor. The tablet that sort of snaps into a keyboard and effectively just converts into a laptop. Is that something you think that's going to gain a fair degree of popularity, or is there still need to be a bit more maturity with the technology for that to really take off?
I think it kind of already exists. It's just that the keyboard is currently sold separately and operates via Bluetooth. I mean, you can get Logitech sells keyboard cases that you can put your iPad in. I think they've got one for the Galaxy Tab as well, the Galaxy Tab 10.1.
But they don't have that. Like, I'm using my laptop, you know, now. You're using, you know, the tablet, and I'm using the laptop because, you know, of the functionality of this, you know, having the keyboard, the screen attached to it, being able to sort of adjust the angle, the fact that the keyboard just sort of sits on my lap, that works really, really well, whereas, you know, some of those keyboard docks aren't quite as stable and solid and good at balancing and so on, whereas these new hybrid devices seem to be, you know, really taking the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I think they're definitely taking that into account with their design, which obviously, with the cases and the tablets, they haven't really done that because they're not really concerned with each other, if that makes sense. Like Logitech, Logitech is probably more concerned with getting the balance right and stuff like that, but you know, Apple isn't really concerned with what Logitech does in terms of making a keyboard for them, so they're not taking into account how it's going to be when someone attaches it to a keyboard later on. They just want it to be easy to use, you know, when it's flat in your lap.
Yeah, and I guess to a degree, Apple have sort of poo-pooed that concept of a hybrid device that will be both a laptop and a tablet. Now, interestingly, Microsoft's Surface, which is there initially, the Surface for Windows RT, is coming out certainly in the US and potentially in some other markets on the 26th of October. That one isn't, you know, doesn't deliver the laptop sort of feature set in the same way as what we've seen from Samsung and HP and others. It's got, you know, really the smart cover that folds out and becomes a keyboard. Do you think they will also end up with a dock so you can use it like a laptop, or are they really wanting to differentiate and make their product quite different to everything else in the market?
I think it'll depend on how usable the current keyboard is. I think if the smart cover keyboard, I shouldn't call it a smart cover because that's an Apple term.
Yes, yeah.
But if that keyboard works really well, then I don't think there'll be a whole lot of demand for people to manufacture extra keyboards for the Surface. If it doesn't work really well for whatever reason, then I think possibly a market like that could definitely...
Yeah, because it looks like it would work quite well when it's on a solid surface like a desk. But, you know, having it just on your lap, you know, it's not so clear whether that will actually work brilliantly in that sort of situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a stand on the back of the Surface, but it's a pretty narrow stand, really. You're not going to be able to rest it on your leg and have
on your knee, yeah.
Yeah, have it supported properly. You'll probably drop your very expensive tablet, so.
Mm. All right, well, we'll be trying all of that out once we get hands-on. Unfortunately, Microsoft have been very... well, they've been keeping the Surface products very, very close to them, and we haven't had any hands-on or seen one. In fact, very few people have really around the world, right? This is you know, quite incredible in terms of product releases, in terms of how locked down this is, right?
Yeah, I think from what I've read, Steve Ballmer has said that it's only going to be launched in the US on the 26th of October, and everyone else is going to have to wait, and we don't know how long.
26th of October, the Surface will launch in the US. We'll certainly be getting hands-on as soon as we can, but we, you know, we don't know exactly
could
when.
Could be a while.
So we'll wait on and see on that, but we'll certainly report back here on the podcast, and no doubt there'll be plenty of online coverage from those that with their hands on as well. So lots really happening in that tablet space. And again, go and have a look at the video at nztechpodcast.com, because we have had a good play around with those. And yeah, my impression of Samsung's devices, although they're not the sort of steel feel of say the Surface or the HP product, is they really did have quite a nice feel about them. And I'm certainly looking forward to us having all of these options in the market, and being able to go out and choose this new type of device that we haven't really had before. Other than the tablets you talked about, like the iPad, where you can get some sort of dock, but it's still a device that's not designed to be both a tablet and a laptop in terms of the full functionality. Similar on the Android side as well. I'm still in the undecided camp in terms of what will be really nice to work with, because I think we're probably still 12 months out from when, for instance, the higher end processors come down to a really nice sort of small and light form factor. So at the moment, the nicest devices are those running on the Intel Atom processor. And those running on the ARM processor, but if you need that extra grunt, you've actually got to have a bigger and heavier tablet, about 50% or so heavier. Yeah. I think there may be some compromise required, and I'm not sure yet, how many devices I'll work on. I think the hope was that you'll be able to ditch your laptop and have one of these that will actually do both, but it may not actually be that way for a lot of people initially, but we're going to try these things out anyway, and I'm sure lots of people will be jumping in and trying something.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, there were some figures that came out last week where Microsoft were talking about some crazy estimated sales numbers for Windows in the sort of 400 million units in the nine-month period. Now, to me, the only way those figures would be at all possible is if a lot of people go out and buy, these new devices, tablets, etc., in addition to still buying a traditional laptop or a traditional PC. Is that what you think that those numbers signify, that Microsoft really are expecting to sell, a lot more units of Windows and move from people buying, say, an iPad and a PC, or an iPad and a laptop, to buying a Windows tablet and a laptop or a PC?
I find that these projected sales figures that technology companies release are generally, well, pretty much universally wrong, and an overstatement. You know, it's for investors, pretty much. So,
well, they've got to be careful, don't they, with investors, yes, to state figures that they don't, they don't heavily believe in?
Yeah, that's true, but I think they do like to plump up a little bit, so that people are more likely to want to keep their money in Microsoft. But yeah, I don't see 400 million happening. I think that it would require a lot of people who are currently running Windows 7 to upgrade. And, I mean, you can do that relatively cheaply compared to buying the operating system outright, especially if you bought a Windows PC recently. So there might be quite a few people who want to do that.
Yeah, so it might be, out of that 400 million, a lot of those might be upgrades, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes some sense. So it might not actually be new systems at all.
But I think a lot of people are quite hesitant to do that right away. But I guess since they're projecting it over 9 months, you know, maybe towards, maybe once mid-next Windows 8 year. Has been out a few months, people will go, okay, well, it's not so bad. Or maybe they'll go, no, I don't want to do that. No,
yeah.
No.
Okay. Now, diving into smartphones, yeah, there's always a whole lot going in going on in the mobile space. Of course, people are now starting to get their iPhone 5s. That they've ordered, although I think most people that have done an outright purchase from Apple's website are still waiting, as far as I'm aware. In fact, I'm not sure if anyone's got those yet from the outright purchases.
I know one person who has gotten his
from an outright purchase off Apple Store. Okay, yep. So there's obviously a few rolling out there, but still the bulk of people wanting to get their hands on it have to sign up for a new contract if you just want to get one quick smart from Vodafone or Telecom. Now, in the Android space, we've had the HTC Desire X just come out in the last week or so. That's an interesting option. It's a step down from the HTC One X, which has been, you know, HTC's kind of you know, their hero device, or their big you know, the one that they've garnered a lot of attention for. You've had a little bit of a look at the specs on that. It's not a huge step down, is it? Still quite a powerful smartphone for the money, coming in at $599.
Yeah, I think basically it's got the same specs as I would have expected to see at the high end of devices a year ago. So it's got a 1 gigahertz dual core processor, and I think the One X has a quad core, and I think it's a little, maybe 1.2 or something. So that basically means that multitasking is better on the One X. But in terms of actual user experience, the difference between quad core and dual core processor is not a lot. So I think it could be quite a nice device, especially since it looks like, from pictures I've seen, I haven't gotten my hands on one yet, that it actually has quite a similar build to the One X. So given that the One X is quite well built and nice, it could be quite a good phone.
Yeah, so it's got a 4-inch screen. So, you know, well, it's still the same size screen as we're seeing in the iPhone 5, but coming in at, well, not quite half the price, but heading in that direction. Pretty powerful. It is a lower res screen. I think it's 800 by 480, but still, you know, a nice screen overall. So, yeah, definitely something worth looking at if you're interested in a sort of more mid-ish range, or, you know, not quite so high end Android handset. I think that one's just on Vodafone at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see that come across onto Telecom as well. Now, also in the I guess that sort of step down area is the Galaxy S3, which was really the direct competitor with HTC's One X, and certainly outselling it by a pretty big margin globally. Samsung are doing something similar with a Galaxy S3 Mini. Now, the surprising thing there is, though, that that's still a way off until we see it in New Zealand. From what we hear, you know, it could be early into the new year that we actually see that. So HTC have sort of stolen a bit of a march on them there by getting their one out the door already, right?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Samsung has been, for the past couple of years, fairly prompt to release their devices after the US, or in some cases before the US. So it is a bit strange, but I'm pretty sure that Samsung is just trying to focus on not just in the smartphone space, but in New Zealand in general on the Windows side of things. So you were telling me earlier they've got a couple of Windows Phone 8 phones coming out shortly.
Yeah, what we're hearing is that we're going to see, and a bit of a, I guess, a bit of a change in the market locally. We're going to see a number of manufacturers launching into the market fairly soon after Windows Phone 8 is announced with handsets. So, you know, we know that Samsung have their Samsung 8 of S in the country at the moment. So that's likely to be, you know, fairly close to the forefront of Windows Phone 8 releases here. You know, my pick is we'll probably see that in the November timeframe, but certainly, you know, November or December, we're going to see a number of devices. And, yeah, we've obviously got Samsung, Nokia, who have been, you know, winning quite a bit of market share here in New Zealand in the smartphone or in that Windows Phone space. With the Lumia 800, and so their new phones, the 820 and 920, are products that people are pretty keen to get their hands on. And but there's a number of others, such as HTC, who are likely to be bringing, you know, or having their product launched into the market. So, yeah, I think those that are interested in the Windows Phone side will likely be reasonably pleased with the offerings available here, and I think this time around we're not going to be months and months behind the rest of the world, which sometimes we have been in some of the other releases, which is some, I think it's somewhat frustrating if you're a technology enthusiast to see a product launch in another country and then you've got to wait 3 months or 6 months for it to launch locally. You know, it's a little bit like seeing your, you know, favorite TV program come out somewhere else and you can't get it here. Although there are some, there are obviously some tricks you can do to get hold of that fairly quickly.
Well, it's the same with the phones, isn't it?
I guess it is. You can do the parallel imports and the like, but there, yeah, there's always a downside to that stuff. So, you know, it's good to see that we hopefully we won't be too far behind on these releases. That said, we've got nothing sort of official. There, you know, haven't been any announcements out, but the sort of the buzz that we're hearing sort of behind the scenes is that those products won't be too far off, which is good.
Good news, yeah.
I think it means we're going to have lots of fun new gadgets really leading up to Christmas available locally.
I'm definitely looking forward to that, getting my hands on that Lumia 920 and giving it a try.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool one, because it sort of slots in right at the top, doesn't it, in terms of specs. When we look at all the phones that are available in the market today, Nokia have sort of outdone most of them in terms of specifications. So, you know, it's really, I guess it's their game to lose as far as having the absolutely top spec phone. It's up to them to really deliver a great outcome, and I guess they're, you know, reliant to a big degree on what Windows Phone 8 ends up being from a software perspective, right?
Definitely. I mean, if you let's take the iPhone 5 as an example here. The iPhone 5 hardware was actually very good and quite an improvement on some of the hardware that they've released in the past. But
certainly tougher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like not so you know, likely to get smashed with a drop. Certainly from the videos that we've seen to date, anyway.
Yeah, but the software was kind of where the iPhone 5 got let down because of iOS 6's, the new operating systems, their map program, their map application, I should call it. That was a little bit old school of me. Their mapping system is just, it's not good. They're quietly improving it, but I mean, it's so bad that they've apologized for it. So there's that, and you know, there are a couple of little other niggly things with the software, which have kind of let it down a little bit. So it's kind of
lots of good features in there, though, too, right?
It's
it's not a complete failure. I think, you know, there are a few areas which are, you know, one or two areas that are a disappointment. But you know, across the board, it's I think for those that have been using iPhone and enjoy the iOS platform, yeah,
it's generally something people are going to be pretty happy to use, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and the iPhone 5 users I've talked to have been pretty pleased with their upgrades. I got to say,
it was the same as ever with an Apple launch, where there was a lot of hate, and then pre-orders went through the roof, and you know all of this stuff. But I do think that Nokia will have a harder time pulling off that kind of trick, because they've got, they're relying on Windows Phone 8 being good. And I just think that since Apple has kind of got this whole hype status thing behind it that Nokia doesn't have so strongly, then, you know, they're going to have to work a little bit harder to make sure everything is perfect.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to be working pretty hard. Because it's a little bit make or break for Nokia, isn't it? I mean, they've struggled a bit over the last couple of years, or a lot, and this is a launch where they will really be throwing the whole business behind making these new products a big success. And you know, we're hearing that price wise, it's going to be up there in the direction of iPhone 5 type pricing. They're top of the line models within the region. They're going to be really, I think, having to put a lot of promotion and so on behind these devices to sort of win some market share. But the info we've got so far makes them look as though they'll stand up pretty well.
Yeah, everything I've seen so far makes the 920 especially look great. So.
Yep. Now, one other smartphone, and again, we haven't had any local info on this, is the HTC One X Plus. So this is the, we talked about the HTC One X earlier, and also, the new HTC Desire X, the lower-end one. So the One X Plus is the one that takes the One X just to that sort of next level, gives it a bit more battery, and makes it compete just a bit better with, for instance, the Samsung Galaxy S3. But we still haven't had any confirmation on a New Zealand launch, so we'll keep a little bit of a watch on that one, because I'm sure Android fans will be really interested. And the other thing to point out is we are still waiting formal confirmation from both HTC and from Samsung on the Jelly Bean updates for those two devices, for the from Samsung the Galaxy S3 and from HTC the One X. But we're told they're not, certainly not too far off on the Samsung side. They've like HTC, that started rolling out in other markets. And it could be here as soon as early November. So, not too far off to wait. So.
Fingers crossed.
Yep. All right, well, that's us. That really wraps up the New Zealand Tech Podcast this week. Now, Siobhan, how do we find you? How do we find you online? What's your Twitter handle?
It's difficult to spell.
We'll put the link up on the nztechpodcast.com.
It's Siobhan Keogh NZ. Believe it or not, there was another Siobhan Keogh on Twitter who stole my name plain.
How rude!
I know, terrible. Probably an Irish person. And you can find me on, obviously pcworld.co.nz is PC World's online place. And we've also got, we've even got a Pinterest feed now that we're trying to get going that you can follow, which is NZ PC World, where I'm basically going online and posting stuff that I think is a bit sexy and or that we're really looking forward to reviewing or that we are reviewing, so people can have a look.
Are you talking sexy from a technology perspective?
Yes,
or
yes.
There some
there are no booth babes.
Okay.
But yeah.
Just checking in there. Okay, cool. All right. Well, we'll look out for those things online, and as I said, that'll be up on the nztechpodcast.com website. You can also find NZ Tech Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Twitter at Paul Spain, also on Facebook and Google Plus, which is actually starting to attract a bit of a genuine audience.
I haven't looked at mine. I've
noticed.
Ages.
So that's quite interesting. There's a bit of action happening on Google Plus, which I recall being at various conferences over the last year, and people always laughing whenever it got a mention. But actually, they're gaining a bit of a following. So, interesting to see a bit more competition in the social media space.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. I mean, it might be a bit of a niche thing, but I think it's been enough time now that we can safely say that it's not going to be Facebook.
It's not. It's different. Yeah. Anyway, we'll leave it at that. We'll have a discussion on that another time. Hey, thanks everyone for listening in to the NZ Tech Podcast this week. And we look forward to catching you all next week. And I hope you enjoy watching our new videos online. See ya.
See ya.